reject this divisive amendment and the CRW's ill-conceived policy proposal to cut sport fishing while allowing increased non-treaty gill netting on the mainland of Colombia. Thank you for your time.
Chris, thank you for your comments. Okay, that concludes the open public input segment this morning. We will quickly move into the director's report. Good morning again, Director Sisowin.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. I will abbreviate this a little bit in the interest of time, but also, as we heard at committee meetings yesterday, it's hard to talk about the various meetings we've been at when really fire is the issue of the day. Amy Windrope is going to give you an update on our fire activities and path forward on that. So I'm going to reserve most of the time for that. I'm going to touch on four or five things that we are working on. Tribal hunting, so this is primarily hunting off reservation. It's fall, so it's time to start hunting, and so the interest in tribal hunting goes up. This happens every year. We struggle trying to get to a better, broader policy on this, but we've had meetings with Skokomish, Elwha, Macaw, and Quinault, as well as briefing the Northwest Indian Fish Commission Wildlife Committee. So this really gets to, we're in a pretty tough spot on this one. We have tribes wanting to hunt off reservation in traditional hunting areas. And so tribe A will say, state, you need to keep those other tribes from hunting in my ceded area. Tribe B will say, I have a treaty right to hunt in those areas. Both tribes, the one thing they agree on is DFW has no authority to make that determination. So we're stuck right in the middle, and we have to tell our enforcement officers something. So we're trying to re-engage in what we're calling our procedural guidelines. That's a uniform collaborative approach with tribes to develop a set of guidelines that will determine how we apply our discretion on when we exercise state enforcement and when we don't. The good news is Sean Yannity, the chair of the Wildlife Committee, has agreed to take on a bit more of a leadership role in that effort. And in conversations with President Fawn Sharp from the Quinault yesterday, she's also offered again. So we have some interest there. And so hopefully we will get to a spot where we have a little more uniform. It will always be controversial, but it will be provide some more clarity and actually consistency across the state is our goal. This year feels like there's a little more energy in it than usual. We ended up briefing the governor's office as well, his staff, so they understand the issues in our path forward, and they seem to be on board with our approach. You've heard it already this morning, the riparian effort from the governor's state tribal effort. This is a result of last year's Centennial Accord, where the governor made a commitment to try to bring the state family together in a more uniform approach to protecting riparian areas, recognizing the importance of the riparian areas for not only fish, but wildlife habitat as well. The science really comes out of our priority habitat species document that says fully functioning riparian really requires one site potential tree height at 200 years is what we should be shooting for. Governor pulled together the state family to try to figure out a uniform way to get to that as much as we can, wherever we can. And we're working with tribes also from their perspective on how we can get more consistent and more complete implementation of that type of a effort. I hesitate to say standard yet, but that's the question. Is a site potential tree height standard something we want across the state? So we're working on it. We've had four like half day meetings, pretty intense meetings with tribal leaders. Those efforts will continue. The goal is to have leadership in late October talk about it so that by next legislative session, the governor has something to base potentially some legislative action for both a voluntary and potentially a more regulatory approach going forward. We've started a government-to-government with the Quinault Nation. This is really on the Chehalis Flood Control Project. As you know, the governor issued letters to Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Department of Ecology earlier, told Ecology to put a pause on the EIS they're doing for a flood retention or dam structure. Pause that work while you evaluate a non-dam alternative, more robust non-dam alternatives. Quinaults are obviously affected by that directly. They've asked for government to government. We've started those efforts. And they will be basically side by side with us in the technical support we're providing for that on the fishery side of elements. So I think a good step. It seems like we are definitely better coordinated between the state family and the tribal interest on that one. A little lighter, we're heading into this season where we offer agency awards to our outstanding employees, probably, and those will be going on throughout the regions. We'll make sure you're aware of that schedule. So if it's in your area, you can attend if you want. It will be virtual. And in October, one of these awards goes to a citizen volunteer participant that we'll bring to this commission in your October meeting and present that award there. Last thing I'm going to touch on before we get to the bigger issue of fires is already been touched on today as well, and you're well aware of it. Governor granted the petition for rulemaking that you all voted on previously, directing the agency to engage in rulemaking for wolf management. Those are the words really where the direction is given, but later the suggestion makes it pretty clear that's around prioritizing non-lethal alternatives in our lethal removal protocols. So that just came out on Friday. We're gathering up to figure out the scope of that rulemaking, and we'll be coming back to you all with a proposed plan and schedule. And with that, as you've heard, the fires are raging throughout Washington. You well know it. If you look out, at least out my window, it's pretty foggy out there. We're lucky that Amy has taken the lead on our internal external efforts on that. And Amy, Deputy Windrop, is going to give you an update on that.
Thanks, Director. Thank you, Chair Carpenter and Commissioners. I thought I would do two things. One is give a preliminary report out on impacts that DFW has experienced from the fires already on the ground, and then move into our plan over this coming weekend and what we are doing for prevention through this opener of the elk archery season and through the conditions that are really going to change, hopefully, by Monday. So let's start with what we know right now. I want to recognize that we have had staff who have been evacuated. We've had staff lose their homes catastrophically. We have staff with their bags packed. We have staff with family that are under threat, both in this state and the states throughout the West. So my heart goes out to our staff, and I just want to recognize the scale of the loss. You know, I hadn't even realized that today was 9/11, and it's oddly resonant and dark, I guess. It's just kind of a dark day. So my heart goes out to staff and my appreciation. The amount of work that wildlife area staff, enforcement staff have done to protect our lands and inventory what's going on in our lands is really incredible. So huge appreciation to staff. Then I also want to recognize, and Commissioner Linville speaks to this, and Commissioner Thorburn as well, that the heartache of our staff around what is lost can't be underestimated. I mean, people have given their lives to these places, to restoring them, to reintroducing species, to taking care of the animals, to husbanding them through. And it's just, you know, our work is hard. You know, we call it kind of pushing the rock up the hill. We push the rock up the hill every single day. And when the whole rock catches on fire, it just feels really hard. So empathy to staff at this moment and to the commissioners and to the citizens of Washington. Okay, so fires with wildlife area impacts. I'm going to give you the names of the fires because that might be a way for people, both in the public and for you all, to kind of keep track of where things are. The Pearl Hill Fire affected our West Foster Creek, Bridgeport, Chester Butte, Sagebrush Flat, Wells, and the Jameson Lake Water Access Site. Of those sites, Chester Butte and Sagebrush Flat and the Jameson Lake Water Access Site are essentially 100% burnt. Evans Canyon Fire affected our Weenass Wildlife Area. About 75,000 acres were burned. The Hot Creek Fire was also called the Whitney Road Fire. That affected our Swanson Lakes Wildlife Area, about 95% burnt. Based on what we know right now, we've seen significant loss of sage and sharp-tailed grouse habitat and leks. I can get into the specifics of that. Our pygmy rabbit program has been severely impacted. We lost one enclosure, the Burton Draw, on the Chester Butte Wildlife Area recovery site was completely lost, while the Sagebrush Flat and Beasley Hills were untouched. There remains free-range rabbit habitat across about 5,000 acres, so all is not lost with the pygmy rabbits, but we have taken a significant hit. We've lost approximately 10 miles of elk fence as part of the Weenass Wildlife Area. We have an emergency declaration out to get that work started ASAP. that fence needs to go back up as soon as we can because the elk will be there and there'll be an impact to ag. We've lost mule deer habitat and elk winter range. We have a lot of concern about how these losses on our wildlife area lands are going to impact neighboring agriculture, and that's something that we're going to be looking at. Swanson Lakes Wildlife Area. You know, we did a bunch of new construction out there. Our new office was mostly spared with some cosmetic damage. The tractor and the vehicles are safe. About 60 miles of boundary fence seem to be intact. We have wood posts and signs that need replacement. Utility poles were destroyed throughout the area. We will not have power probably till October. The Evans Creek fire, it burned through a forest health treatment area that had been sold and was set to begin treatment really soon. A bridge over the Weenass Creek was lost. And there's some access implications around that. Okay, so the final piece is that we have grazers. We're working with the Cattlemen's Association who are looking for alternate pasture. We're looking to accommodate folks in the Okanagan. We do have some additional pastures available in the Metau, the Sinlahik, and the Scratch Creek wildlife area. But it's really unlikely that we're going to be able to offer more than that given to the amount of challenges with habitat loss that we've seen. So that's a quick lowdown on infrastructure and ecological impacts. I want to turn now to fire prevention over the coming weekend. We met yesterday afternoon with the Eastside Wildlife, the Eastside Regional Directors who brought recommendations from their wildlife areas. We met with Cynthia Wilkerson, the chief, and some the Eastside captains as well to talk about what are we going to do this coming weekend. Because what we see is that conditions are getting better, but they remain very high for fire on the east side. It's returning to the normal wind conditions in terms of the direction. So we're not seeing that really unusual wind that brought this incredible fire that we experienced over the last week. But if a fire were to start, it would be catastrophic. The conditions are such that we don't have the personnel to fight the fire. They are deployed already throughout Oregon, Washington, and California, and the fire load is very high. So our tactics or our goal over this coming weekend, between now, it has already started, through Sunday night, is an aggressive outreach campaign to all of our existing east side wildlife areas where we think there is a likelihood of fire. So we're focused on Assotin Creek, Grouse Flats, the Toucanon, Oak Creek, Kalakum, L.T. Murray, Sinlahikan, and Metau Valley. We will be going camp to camp. We have deployed enforcement and wildlife staff to those areas. They will be going over the next couple of days, camp to camp to camp, articulating a set of key messages. So the key messages that we're working on right now that we're putting out are that we need to take every precaution to protect, prevent fire if you're planning to visit our wildlife area or water access sites. We are recommending that people do a cold camp. Campfires and charcoal briquettes are currently prohibited across eastern Washington, but please avoid using personal camp stoves, propane fire rings, and lanterns fueled by propane. Eat no cooked foods or food cooked at home and bring it with you. Be aware when smoking to smoke in your vehicle. Do not let any cigarette land on anything outside your vehicle. Drive and park safely. Do not park vehicles in dry, grassy areas as residual heat from exhaust can ignite dry gas. Avoid operating vehicles away from developed roads. Do not target shoot. Discharge firearms only if engaged in lawful hunting. We have a flyer that actually I'm going to ask Nikki if she can put up this flyer where we are taking camp to camp throughout these wildlife areas. We've distributed it to DNR so they know what we're doing and parks. We have we are going to be doing a social media campaign, an email blast to all license holders. So that's pretty big. Yeah, there we go. So basically, we're full court press on educating people that we need to do everything we can on our wildlife areas to protect our wildlife areas, neighboring lands, and the communities to prevent fire from starting. We do have people on our wildlife area lands. They are already out there getting ready for the archery season, which begins tomorrow morning. We have people wildlife viewing already out there camping. We've got fishers out there camping. So this is our best hope to communicate to people how to make sure we don't exacerbate the fires that we have right now in Washington. So I will stop there and I'm happy to take any questions about what we're doing over this weekend or about what has already happened. And I also invite Commissioner Linville or Commissioner Thorburn to weigh in on any impacts that they see that I didn't talk deeply about or didn't mention.
Any questions of the Deputy Director?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. This is
Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, just thank you for that presentation, Amy. Very thorough, as always. Very concerning. Hearts and prayers go out to everyone, not just in Eastern Washington, but fires here west of the Cascades. So a question came in from a member of the public concerning, they made mention of the fact that DNR has closed their lands to public access. First of all, is that true? And then the second question is, and I think you answered it, is that WDFW is not taking the step to close its lands to public access.
That's correct. So the Department of Natural Resources has closed all their east side lands. That means that any hunters or wildlife viewers that are out on our lands and were thinking they were going to access DNR lands, you are not allowed onto DNR lands. So please be mindful of that. Our lands remain open for the hunting seasons that are open and for wildlife viewing and for fishing. The problem with closing lands, it's sort of the horses are literally outside the barn and they're already in their camps. So we thought instead of creating a bunch of non-compliance and essentially leaving on the ground perhaps those that would be the least responsible, it made more sense to go into this aggressive outreach campaign. We spoke yesterday with the regional directors, and they spoke to the wildlife area managers on the east side, and the recommendation from all those folks was don't close the lands, we just need to get the message out. So that's where we're at right now, but we are communicating with DNR, we are communicating with parks to make sure that as a state family, we were aware of what everyone's doing, that we're sharing messaging.
Okay, quick follow-up. Hopefully we can broadcast that widely to the public.
Absolutely. So we have a social media campaign underway. We have an email being sent to all license holders. And then we're going person to person. And I've also about to send an email to all staff asking staff to also do the outreach to their contacts. Our staff are very much embedded in these communities and can really help us.
We have hands up from Commissioner Graybell and Commissioner Thorburn in that order. And then Commissioner Linville.
Hi, Amy. I would like to get a copy of that flyer so I can post that on my Facebook page, put it in my reports, put it on my website, do what I can to help that way.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'll do it right away.
Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you. Thanks, Deputy Director, for acknowledging the staff particularly. The losses were only beginning to feel. Besides, the human loss, our staff devote themselves to the health of our wildlife communities, and it's the grief that we're experiencing is just really hard to fathom, and the fact that everybody's out. All hands on deck, trying to stay on top of this fast-moving situation while experiencing that grief is so commendable. We have some sense of what the losses mean to wildlife just because of the extent of the habitat, but that's going to unfold in time, and I think that this is going to be continuous for our staff who care so much about what they do and the health of our wildlife. So I thank you for starting off with that impact. I think it's going to be ongoing, and I just want to express that I hope we as the commission continue to offer to be aware of that and offer the support that's needed as we get through this tragedy.
Yeah. Thank you.
Commissioner Linville, then Commissioner Anderson, please.
Yes, thank you, Deputy Director. I certainly don't want to put any more work on staff, but one thing that has started to you know, as the shock sort of starts wearing off a little bit, or maybe not wearing off, but return to senses. I'm wondering, our ranch is sitting at the southern end of the Pearl Fire, right at the border. And I've been thinking about hunting, and I was wondering if maybe staff could put a little thought around, so this is major mule deer habitat, and they've lost so much of their habitat. And I don't even know how to ask this. Like, I'm starting to feel like we're kind of a little bit of a refuge and a place that they are going to come to, eat and live. And I'm starting to wonder about hunting impacts, and if the staff had any thought about, you know, I hate to have such a small area for them just to survive on and then put hunting pressure on them. And I want to be really thoughtful about how I'm asking this, because I'm not, I guess I just kind of want some biologist opinions on, I'm sorry, I'm not doing a very good job formulating this. I guess I'm asking if hunting pressure is going to, what that might look like for these animals that are so displaced right now. I guess that's really what I'm kind of asking. And I'm not trying to put a big burden on staff at all, just maybe some general thoughts on that.
Okay. Let me ask around.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Anderson?
Yes, maybe with regard to Commissioner Linville's thoughts that it may become an issue of assessing the carrying capacity of the land, and especially the winter range, if that's been affected, whether or not hunts are contracted or expanded, frankly, because you have that issue of whether or not the herds are going to collapse based on what food might be available or not. So, but that is a kind of a management input that needs to be assessed, so that makes sense to me. I'd like to applaud the department for the measured approach here. This is a different situation than the COVID, but with COVID we had a shutdown, and it became a very difficult, contentious issue. I think this is the balance of really getting the word out, really being aggressive, trying to communicate to people, letting them know and take the responsibilities. It could get worse, folks. And if that's the case, then, you'll have to do more, I'm sure. But, I just want to say that I think you're on the right track, and I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else regarding the part of the director's report this morning?
I think that's it, sir.
Well done. Thank you for all the heavy lifting you folks are doing, and hopefully it gets better, not worse, and appreciate it. We now are at a break time. We're a bit behind, so let's come back at 10:35. Does that work for everyone? Thank you.
Are you seeing the right screen? Is it the presentation?
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, Larry, maybe next week lunch, eh?
Yeah, let's do that for sure. I'll run up. I'll definitely do it. Yeah. Okay, let's see.